Hello and welcome to Leadership Perspective, the official podcast of the Nordic Resistance Movement that voices the organization's positions and thoughts. This is our sixth episode, and as many of you know, this is a monthly podcast. My name is Fredrik Weidland, and with me I have the leader of the Nordic Resistance Movement, Simon Lindberg. Greetings.
Hello, thank you.
I would like to start by saying that we received very good response for the previous episode and also more listeners. And one thing that you mentioned to me right before we started this recording was that a woman at VK transcribed the whole episode and sent it to you. Is that true? Because that must have taken a very long time to do.
Yeah, no, I was also a bit surprised, but positively surprised, of course. She liked the episode so much that she thought that more people needs to get this message, even the ones who don't listen to the podcast. So that's why she did this, and she also pinned it at her profile or something, I think. So it's at the top. So everyone that visits her profile, the first thing they see is this transcription of the episode. So she thought it was very, very good and very, very important to spread to as many people as possible.
Yeah, and I also thought the last episode was very good, and it was important subjects that we addressed, but it was also more chemistry between us and, well, better English, I think, because it's still unusual for us, for me at least, to speak English on a regular basis. So.
Yeah, but it is not our native language, of course, and that affects. It is just like that. So no promises for this episode, but hopefully it will be as good.
Yeah. So glad that you liked it, and please continue spreading our episodes. Mm. Yeah, and 2 weeks ago we broadcast a leadership perspective, or ledarperspektiv in Swedish, where we, or Simon Lindberg, commented for the first time our stance on COVID-19. Of course, we have had coverage on the matter, where we have been critical in both directions, but we had not previously commented on the matter from the leadership's point of view. So I just want to summarize what came out of that episode. So we believe that the virus exists, but it is very hyped. This hype benefits some of the elite. The globalists are also very much in disagreement. The government say one thing, the media say another thing. Globalist organizations say different things, and countries say different things. So if it is a plandemic, it is poorly planned and poorly conducted, I would say. And you have to be specific when you refer to them as they or the globalists. And also, we as revolutionaries must realize that crisis and our ability to ourselves take advantage from it are the only way for us to prevail. So our stance in the matter is that we cannot know for sure, and therefore we remain calm and wait, while we definitely criticize things that are obvious, like that the elite try to take advantage of the crisis, and that governments do not have crisis preparedness to deal with such crisis, and so forth. So we stay calm at the moment, but our job as revolutionaries must be to deal with what's to come. There will be mass unemployment, there may be draconian laws, and there will also be strong condemnations of globalism and more people to our ranks. So what do you say about this?
Yes, I agree with what you say, because I said it 2 weeks ago in Swedish. So, I mean, of course, members within our organization can have slightly different personal views on different things. And this is totally okay, since we support freedom of speech. But as a organization and in the position we are at, we have nothing to win in going in a different direction than the one you say here. There are not evidence enough for us to go full pandemic or anything else, and there is not proof enough to state that the virus is much worse than it is and it will kill all the world's population either. And even if there was enough evidence for any of these alternative theories or anything else, you still must think on how the receivers of the message would react to it. There is a risk that they would dismiss us as tinfoil hats. And if they do so, they would also dismiss our other policies. So then you have to ask yourself, is the corona question important enough to risk that people dismiss our other policies? And there I would without doubt say no. Absolutely, corona is a hot topic right now, or at least the last couple of weeks. And for sure, we must talk about topical questions to be relevant and to keep ourselves interesting. But in the long run, in the eternal struggle, corona is not as near important for us as, for example, the Jewish question, as we talked about in the last episode, or the race question that we have covered in another episode. And to take a radical stance in this question, corona question, whatever that stance might be, is unwise and not aligned with our core values. It is instead, and as you said, better to stay calm, to observe, and of course to take every chance we can to attack the system. And also, of course, we must inform people on how the elite take advantages of the situation, as you also said. But except for that, I would say that the corona question is a non-question to us as an organization, otherwise than in the ways we have mentioned it.
Yes, very good. And then we move on to the next segment, I think. What has happened in the struggle since last time? So we talk about the time between the second week in April and now in early May. So what has happened?
Yes, during this month, there has been a good bit more than 200 activities carried out. As usually, there has been everything from putting up stickers and handing out flyers to study groups, lectures, wilderness activity, public activities, and so on. And I will, as usual, go through some of the most interesting activities. And I would start with the most interesting and the most successful one during this period of time. And that's a quite recent one. What I refer to is our celebration of the International Labor Day on the 1st of May. As we have talked about before in Leadership Perspective, we should have had a big demonstration in Uppsala. But due to corona, this demonstration will be postponed until later, when this whole, when things are more back to normal again. However, we still felt the need to do something to celebrate this Workers' Day and to show ourselves as the true Workers' Party to the masses. Corona should not silence us totally on this point. So during the day, we carried out activities from more than 30 different cities all over the north. In total, there was several thousands of posters put up with worker-friendly messages that was put up in the central parts of these more than 30 cities. And the messages on these posters were things like Folkgemeinschaft instead of class struggle, and more informative ones like, did you know that Adolf Hitler made 1st of May a holiday 9 years before Sweden? And things that were somewhere between informative and propaganda, like, did you know that there are socialists that do not support open borders and pedophile parades?
Yeah, also would like to say that I don't know if many of our listeners know that, but the ruling party in Sweden for the last 100 years, more or less, is the Social Democrats. And in the 30s and 40s, they created this Folkhemmet. Yeah, it was very much aligned with the Folkgemeinschaft. And they copied Third Reich politics and made travels to Germany and looked how they made their societies and things like that. So when on the posters, we like to say that, well, your ideas comes from us originally.
And that we are true to those ideals, because they, of course, do not stand for these policies anymore. They have changed year after year after year. They have changed from these policies into some globalist, capitalist, Marxist mix that is today's Social Democrats.
Yeah, but the Swedish or the Nordic social democracy wasn't always like that, actually. So it was it was a copy of the National Socialist Germany, a lesser copy, of course, but a quite good society, I think, if you compare it to others at that time, and also if you compare it to modern social democracy.
Definitely. Yeah, so except for these posters, we also had a live cast show on the day, 1st of May, with several interviews with interesting people around the North. But also there was free speeches, 1st of May speeches, that we aired during this podcast. So it was like it would have been on the demonstration with speeches, only that now they were sent online instead. And yeah, I held one of the speeches, and actually you, Veidland, you were a host of the 1st of May podcast show.
Yeah, it was very great. I spoke nonstop for 5 hours.
Yeah.
And well, I'm from the northern part of Sweden, and there we speak less than others. Than other Swedes, I could say. So,
it was a challenge.
I managed it. So,
yeah.
Was a bit tired afterwards.
Mm. No, but it was very good. And otherwise, I guess the highlight of the day for many people, the activist highlight at least, was that activists in Stockholm, disguised as construction workers, they climbed up with a ladder on a balcony to one of the biggest unions' headquarters and put up a big banner with our internet address, a couple of two runes, and the text, "Workers of the North, unite." So it was a bit a trolling of the socialist message, "Workers of the World, unite." So yeah, that was a really, really nice activity. And that they managed to get up there and put up this banner on their building.
Yeah, it was epic. And LO, the umbrella organization for this unions in Sweden, is not actually one of the biggest. It's the biggest Sweden. Working together with social democracy.
Mm. Yeah. Yes. So even though there sadly was no demonstration on 1st of May from the Nordic Resistance Movement, as we have seen the last years, it has been made a tradition of ours, I still believe it was a great day, actually, and that we made the absolute best possible we could out of the situation with these posters, with this activity in Stockholm, and with this podcast, with also speeches and so on. I think the result was not as good as a real demonstration, but almost as good, actually. And also to be mentioned is that in Finland, our good friends in the Koti Vapauta movement, they also put up worker-friendly poster during this day. So there was national socialist pro-worker propaganda in all Nordic countries.
Yeah, and if we compare it to other political organizations or organizations, it was more or less only we, Nordic Resistance Movement, that were out doing activism on the 1st of May.
Mm. Yeah, the other ones, they had these podcasts and online celebrations as well, but only that, nothing active on the streets. So we own the streets.
Again.
Yes. Other than this, during the month, we worth of mention is that we traditionally honored the fallen hero, Gösta Hallberg Kyla. That was a very active Swedish National Socialist in the 30s that died in the battle against Soviet when he volunteered in the war on Finland's side. And except for putting down flowers on his grave and having a little gathering there and giving a speech, we also had activists that stood guard at his grave since in the past it has been vandalized by filthy Reds. So, but they didn't try to do anything this year, but still we see it as an obligation to stand guard there around his death day that we honor him at. And another man that was celebrated during the month was Adolf Hitler, since it was his birthday, the 20th of April. And on this day, there were some social gatherings all over the north, but also there was bigger propaganda campaigns in both Denmark and Norway, where they, in different matters, celebrated this man. Also, traditionally, autonomous activists, they raised swastika flags in flagpoles all over the north on this day.
Yeah, those autonomous national socialists, oh, they are very good. They should join us.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, otherwise, during the month, a couple of smaller things, but that is worth of mention here, is that activists also in Sweden repainted a stair from, it was painted with a pedophile rainbow, and it was repainted into the much more beautiful Resistance dark green. And then there has also been a lot of activism about Corona, to show people the links between globalism and the spread of this disease, but maybe even more importantly, to show people that our fight will go on no matter what, repressions or viruses, we will keep fighting. So, yes, I think that's about it for this month.
Yeah, and I think, well, it's a month where it's been a little bit hard to do big things. Do you agree?
Yes, there has not been as nearly as many public activities as usual because of the circumstances we are at. But still there has been some smaller things like standing with banners over bridges with the flags and so on. So there still has been activism. But I guess more basic activism, more putting up stickers and posters and yeah, handing out flyers in people's mailboxes and so on, then bigger activities, so to say.
Yeah, but also a lot of internal activities like physical tests, martial art, survivalism, that sort of in the wilderness.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I do not think that our activists have had free time this month either. They are always living for the struggle and putting in a lot of hours in the struggle. But of course, with the different circumstances, exactly what they do might change. But they are as active as always in different kind of ways.
Yeah, and some days preparedness training are important also. So.
Mm, absolutely.
Yeah, very great. And then we move on to ideological tactical question. And we in the Nordic Resistance Movement describe ourselves as a revolutionary organization. Therefore, in this section, we intend to go more into what it means to be revolutionary and what we mean when we describe ourselves as it. So, yes, do you want to start answering that? What do we mean when we say we are a revolutionary organization?
Actually, there is quite a lot of things we mean by this term. And it will be a quite long answer to fully explain it, but I will do so anyway. Because we are revolutionary in all aspects, ideological, cultural, practical, and also in our propaganda. So I will go through these different ways where we are revolutionary. And I start with what I mean when I say that we are ideologically revolutionary. Our political vision is revolutionary since it implies a completely different system than the one that rules us today. We talk about breaking ourselves free from the capitalistic economical world order. We talk about replace the liberal parliamentary democracy with the governance better suited for our people. We talk about leave the European Union and the other globalist pacts and instead unite the Nordics countries into one nation. We also talk about implementing Folkgemeinschaft instead of egocentrism, materialism and Marxism. And the most important change of them all, of course, is to make the survival and freedom of our race as the core value on which society is built. And all of these things are definitely revolutionary. We are not stating that everything was better in the past and we do not want to turn back time. Instead, we want to create a totally new future that is better than anything we have seen in the past before. Our people shall reach its full potential, and our nation thereby shall reach new heights. And we do not just want to reform things, and therefore there is also no compromise whatsoever. Because you cannot build a tower on a rotten ground. Instead, you must first erase what we have and level the whole thing to the ground. First after that, we can build something completely new that is tall enough to reach the stars and strong enough to stand the test of time. So we talk about a full revolution in the people's whole mindset, where they start to look out and act for the people and nation as a whole, and with a long-term mindset instead of just doing things for themselves here and now. And this revolution, it is totally necessary, not to heal the wounds in our racial soul, but to evolve us to being something even better than we have ever been before. Our struggle is not just about our racial survival, but also about total liberation and evolution. Why should we settle with getting things a little bit better when we have the potential of creating something truly astonishing? And this is why only a revolutionary national socialist organization is good enough. Others, they could lure you with nice costumes and populist slogans, but as long as they want us to stay part of this system that wants to erase our people, then engagement for them will at its best be a waste of time. Shortcuts because of cowardice or a short-term mindset will never result in something positive in the long run. We do not need to make things a little better. We need to change it all. So the only thing we want and need is a white revolution. because that is the only solution. And I could also mention the cultural aspect of this whole ideological aspect, because we do not wait for a change of power before we start this revolution. No, actually, it has already been started by our ongoing work to make our members and sympathizers of today to become these people that we want to see the whole nation consist of in the future. So we do not just think and theorize as National Socialists, we live as National Socialists. Within our organization, we encourage a spirit of self-improvement and the will of sacrifice, and we put the Volksgemeinschaft into practice within our movement each and every day.
Yeah, like I said before, that we as revolutionaries must realize that crisis and how we deal with it are the only way for us to prevail. But like you say, we must build this new man to be ready when this happens. Like, I know that William Pierce spoke a lot about it, to create a new man with other values and another way of thinking. So that's one step, and also to undermine the system always. So
yeah, yes, and both of those, and especially the first one you said, to create a new man, that is definitely something revolutionary. Definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, so this was revolutionary by ideology and culture, but we are, as I said, also revolutionary by action. And some of the more moderate nationalists or nationalist politicians, they keep talking about how important it is to look right for the masses, that it's more important to look right than to act right, and that this right look is to look as bourgeois as possible, that it is better to take shit from our enemies than to stand our ground and fight back, because when we do so, we lower ourselves to our enemy's level. That it is better to get sympathized from the masses by crying out in media as victims than it is to win a fight and tell the people about that. And all of this is the opposite of the way we think is the best and how we try to portray ourselves. Instead of this, we want to be recognized as a strong force. So we fight back hard and we never take any shit. We do not whine about things, but accept that violence and repression against us, it's natural parts of being in the true opposition.
Yeah, because it's a difference. When you have the power, you can have another bearing. Then you can be this bourgeoisie if you want to, with higher bearings and stuff like that. But when we do not have the power, we must be revolutionaries and able to, well, get dirty in the struggle also.
Yes. And if we continue on the subject, others, they may think that you, for example, should always obey the police, that even if the police treats you badly, you must accept this because it looks bad if you get into a struggle with the police. However, we understand that the police has as one of their missions to defend this system, and that they thereby always will treat us badly as long as we challenge the system for real. So therefore, we act in accordance to our rights, no matter what the police say or does to prevent us. And other political organizations, they maybe hand out food to homeless people or patrol the streets to help maintain the system and win cheap political points. We, on the other hand, we carry out these activities because we want to throw down the system and show the people that the system has failed when it comes to guaranteeing the people's safety and welfare, and that we care about our people when today's system fails them. And others, they think you should dissociate from everyone and everything all the time to show that you are better. You should dissociate from Hitler, from individuals that act with more radical methods than yourself, or from your own members if they do something inappropriate. But we understand that this is just a way to appease the system, and therefore we would never do such a thing on someone else's initiative. Of course, we could distance ourselves from someone or expel our members if they break our rules, but we will never do this just because the media or the system wants us to do so. And so on and so on and so on. There could be plenty of examples, but this was some of them at least. We play the game with our own rules, not the system's rules. I would also like to clarify that, of course, we try to look good. We try to look good, strong, and healthy. But we believe it is even better to act good, strong, and healthy, and that this actually also makes you look better. We are not politicians. We do not try to look like politicians. We do not think or act like politicians. We are a revolutionary force sprung out of the people, acting for the best interest of the people. And lastly then, we are revolutionaries in our propaganda. We perfectly understand that the shit eventually will hit the fan, as you also talked about before, and that people then will look for an alternative to the system of today. When the masses are having a hard time to get food, or when they can't defend themselves at all from being robbed, molested, and raped, when they can't flee anymore, when they can't hide from reality anymore, then who will they look for? Will they look for another sleazy politician in a nice suit that comes with empty promises? Or will they look for something else, something radically different? A strong force that since the beginning of times always have stood up for themselves, never lied, and never compromised. Of course, they will follow the strong force instead of the sleazy politician that put them in this situation. And this is what we must be and always portray ourselves as in our actions and in our propaganda. To be able to keep being and developing into this strong force that is necessary, there is a heavy weight that lies on our propaganda. How we appear to people, who we are trying to reach, and how we are trying to do it. And we do not want the weak masses to join us and change our organization from within into what they are. Instead, we want to change the masses into what we are. And to be able to do so, we foremost must recruit people with the right kind of mindset, or at least people that we believe can be transformed into the right mindset without too much work. So we want to recruit idealists, self-sacrificing altruists, fanatics. These people, they won't be reached by us preaching about the costs of mass immigration, or how many percentage the crime rates have risen, or something like that. No. These people, they will join us if they get struck by the truth. And the truth is that our race slowly but surely face its extinction with no turning back. The truth is that this system is a dead end. It's corrupt and rotten to the core. And we must also get everyone to know our vision, our goals, our dream, that we have the potential to create something completely else, so much better, totally unique and fantastic, amazing. Because these are things worth sacrificing for. Our children's future, that is something to be fanatic about. And a strong revolutionary force can save our nation, no matter how bad things might seem. A strong and fanatic force will go through hell and back if that's what's necessary. And by the same reason, I also believe it's important to always, when we're talking propaganda, to always show our people's strength and potential and not its weaknesses. It's important to not see our people as worthless just because they have not woke up and started to fight back. Rather, it is they are temporarily caught by the establishment's brainwash. But with our fight, we will eventually set them free, and we will make them understand that the potential that lies within them through their blood. And in order to make them realize this, we must already, in the propaganda, portray ourselves as a strong people, a people that has the right values within our blood and that has the possibility to rise, fight back, and be victorious no matter what.
Very good. Thank you for the answer. But many people think about think of violence and weapons when they hear the word revolution. But does not a revolution have to be violent?
No, it is correct, of course, that many people think about the term revolution like this. And especially maybe you can say that our enemies, they try to deliberately misinterpret that this is what we mean when we talk about the revolution. That they say that just because we are revolutionaries, we want war, we want violence, we want bloodshed. However, the term revolution actually does not have anything to do with violence itself. Revolution means a total and complete change of the ruling system. And if we take an example from America, since I know we have a lot of listeners there, that the Democrats get elected and take power instead of the Republicans, that is not a revolutionary change, since despite their differences in smaller details, they actually stand up for the same core values. They stand up for capitalism, Marxism, and the replacement of our people. And a revolution, that is something completely else. That is, as said, a total and complete change of everything you know of. And a revolution could, of course, be violent, but does not necessarily have to be so. As an example, when NSDAP took power in Germany, that was definitely a revolution, but it was a relatively non-violent revolution. They got elected into power. And of course, it would be fantastic if we could carry out the revolution in peace and without any bloodshed at all. This, I would say, is our uttermost visionary and ideal goal. This would be the best thing that can happen. However, when it comes to our whole race, to be or not to be, a revolution is totally necessary and is therefore a must. And with that being said, I would rather see a violent revolution than no revolution at all.
Yeah. And it's also more likely that the first shot comes from the system. System shooting at the people. Like people demonstrating against the system.
Mm.
And in that sense, it is self-defense.
Right? Yeah, exactly. So that the if it will be violent, which it will probably be to some extension at least, but it will not necessarily be us that starts the violence, but more likely the system that does so.
Yeah. So that we are revolutionary does not that mean that we are a militant terrorist organization?
No, not at all. We are a legal and civil resistance movement, at least as long as we are allowed to be that. But I mean, if we were terrorists, of course, we would not have been able to be public persons like you and me are. We would not have been able to be totally out in the open with our activities, handing out flyers and so on, because then we instead would have been put to rot in jail or even shot, like you said there before. There are no terrorist actions connected to us whatsoever, and there has never been throughout our history. However, our ideals of a strong white race, that seems to some that it should be classified as terrorism. But that's another question.
Yeah, but the reason I ask this question is because a Jew in the Democratic Party in the U.S. recently tried to classify us as international terrorist organization within the American Congress. Why would they do this if we aren't connected to any terrorist crimes?
This is, of course, because they are extremely afraid of us. And they know that they can't defeat us fair and square with the truth. They see, terrifyingly, that we grow. And they see that people all over the world, white Americans included, are inspired by our struggle and wants to follow us. They know as well as we do that if they do not stop us, eventually we will win. And it will be harder to defeat us the more we grow. And to just classify us as terrorists and ban us may seem as an easy way to get rid of us. However, this of course wouldn't have stopped us anyway. And also, I believe that the masses eventually will look through their lies. But banning us would never stop us. We keep on fighting until victory or death. And that is no matter what they throw in our way. But as said, our ideals, they seem like terrorism to them. Because our ideals, it's, as said, a revolution. It is the opposite of their system.
And like you say, they cannot stop us by banning us. And that is because we have this revolutionary mindset.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If we played with the system's rule, then of course we would just lay down and cry if they ban us. But we do not play by the system's rules. We make our own rules. So if they try to change the rules, we don't care. We will continue to fight.
Yeah, we will adopt. So, but should we also take a view of violence when we still touch it?
Yeah, briefly then. Maybe it is a full episode, but briefly, we could say that we are definitely no pacifists. We understand the power of brute force and the power of violence, and we also understand why the system used this, because how we even look at it, it is the system that has the monopoly of violence today. They can conduct legal violence with their police and their military forces and so on. So this is not something that makes us meaner than other, that we are not pacifists. Also, the system of today are not pacifists.
Apart from this, the legal use of violence from the system, they also collaborate with the Antifa and such, and use them when it comes to illegal violence.
Mm. Yes. So. However, when it comes to us today, we do not conduct offensive violence at all. We only use violence in self-defense. But we always use violence in self-defense. If you attack us, it will hurt. So that you and others learn that you should not do so again in the future. Very simple. We have regular martial arts and physical trainings everywhere where we are active. And this is, of course, so that we are as prepared as possible for when someone tries to violate us. We defend ourselves. We defend our comrades. We defend our flags. We defend our honor with our lives. If you use violence against us, you will get fought back. And this don't matter if you are Antifa racial strangers or police. If you attack us, we will fight back. Self-defense, it is a duty and a rule that must be followed by every member of the Nordic resistance movement.
I think you agree, but this strategy has been very effective because we have been fighting before the leftists on the streets for several years, but then we also prevailed so on the streets. So now it's no problem to do activism on the streets because the leftists are too afraid to attack us. They only attack us when they have the police there. So in some cases, they actually call the police to arrive at the scene. Because then they have this wall of policemen that so they can throw things over them towards us. But this strategy has been very effective in Sweden, I would like to say. We can be almost or more or less anywhere with 5 to 10 activists.
Yes, because people that use violence against you, the only language they understand is to get violence back at them. And then they learn. They learn painfully that it costs to get your hands on us. And as you said, this is quite not common, but it happens now and then, as you said, with the police, that there is no trouble whatsoever until the police arrives. And then the red starts to gather behind the police. And of course, the police, as we talked about a little bit before, the system use the Reds also as their way of conducting violence against us. So they do never stop the Reds from using violence behind their backs. They stand, in some cases, they even stand side by side to each other and attack us, as we saw in, for example, 1st of May in Kungälv last year.
Yeah, that was insane. Shoulder by shoulder, they stood. Completely absurd to see, but that's the reality here in Sweden and of course in many other countries also.
Yeah, and it's not something we cry about. As I said before, it's we face this reality. It is the reality of being in an oppression, and I wouldn't have wanted it any other way. If the system with their police, if the system drones in Antifa, if they would have taken side by us, then we would have done something terribly wrong. So all of this is, of course, just proofs that we do something right, at least, and that that they are afraid of us.
Yeah, and it also proves that we are in Sweden, we are the only revolutionary force that exists in the country, because the leftists are lackeys to the system. They are not revolutionaries anymore. In some cases, they were before. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Last question. When will the revolution come, and what can our listeners do to ensure that it is National Socialists who are victorious?
Yeah, first of all, it is necessary to understand that before we can be successful with a revolution, we need to have support among the masses. The masses, of course, do not need to join us before we can ignite the revolution, but they need to be passively support to us, at least to the extent where they do not stand up against us. They do not need to actively support us. They do not even need to vote on us. But they need to feel that it would be all right if we took the power. They must at least see that we would do as good of a job as the current system, at least as good as that. And the trouble with this, however, is that the masses, they know what they have, but they cannot be certain on what they will get. So, of course, most of them acknowledge that they do not live in a paradise, but at least they live without trouble for having food on their table. at least they have entertainment in their TV, and they have a warm and dry residence to sleep in. And even if they somewhat believe that we would have done a better job, it still takes very much from them to be willing to risk what they got. And this all means that probably things in society needs to get a lot worse before we can get this necessary revolution. However, the system of today is a sandcastle. The question is not if, but when it will fall. And what we must do until then, no matter if it will be tomorrow or in 50 years from now that this sandcastle will fall, it is to build the strong movement that could step in and claim the power when their castle turns to dust. That the people then will turn to us as we are the strong force. That we must prepare as much as we can for when this day happens. And as said, and as you said in the beginning, with these corona crisis and the upcoming mass unemployment and such so on, maybe we are closer to these times than we even would like could dream of. Or maybe they will save it somehow and it will take a little longer, but someday it will definitely happen. All signs are there. Their eternal growing economy will not last forever, that's for sure. So the best thing you could do, if you really want a revolution, and if you really want us to stand victorious when that time comes, that is to already today join your local National Socialist organization and do what you can for it to grow, to stand ready for when the time comes. And if you by some reason don't want to join us, then at least support us. Support us with money, support us by spreading this podcast, by spreading our propaganda physically or on the web. No one can do everything, but everyone can do something. And together, we become the strong force necessary to change it all and create a brighter, whiter tomorrow. To ignite, to go through it, and to stand victorious after the revolution. That is something we need to do together as one.
Thank you. And very, very good episode, I think. Yeah, so we will end this episode for this time. Questions and suggestions on topics for future episodes of Leadership Perspective can be sent to info@nordicresistancemovement.org. We do also appreciate both negative and positive feedback. And please spread this episode on social medias and help the Nordic Resistance Movement in any way you can. You can read more on us on our webpage, nordicresistancemovement.org. And next episode will come out the 3rd of June, 2020. See you then. Bye.
Thanks for this time. Take care and bye.